You get me again.
All right. I am excited to unpack this passage this morning. But before we do, I'm actually going to have you do something different than we normally do. I would love for you to turn to either your teaching notes page in this book or a notes page in the back, and I'm going to have you write something down. I would love for you to take a minute to just write down what are the things that are most pressing on your mind and heart right now. We want to make those an offering to God. So what are those things that are just kind of sitting with you? Whatever that may be. It might be family, health. And just take a moment and write down the things that are on your mind and heart right now. As an aside, I think this is a good exercise for us to do regularly, especially when we're coming to God's word or to a time in prayer, to just kind of allow us to know what is it that's really sitting with us. I'm going to ask you a totally different question, going to seem unrelated, but related to our passage. When you think about heaven, I want you to write it down. What comes to mind? When you think about heaven, what comes to mind? You guys are quieter than I ever experience you. It's amazing. You're good students. I like it. And then you don't have to write this out, down, but when you look at what you just wrote about heaven, I want you to truly ask yourself, how enthusiastic are you about what you just wrote on that page? How much does that ignite enthusiasm for you? It's an important question as we go into this passage, and we'll get into that more, but we've been talking about the Sermon on the Mount for a while now, which really is about what does it mean to be part of God's kingdom, to live for his kingdom. And the last couple weeks, we talked about this theme of hypocrisy in verses 6, 1 through 18. It was hypocrisy in giving, hypocrisy in praying, hypocrisy in fasting. And we addressed what all of those are in light of God's kingdom. But there was so much hypocrisy happening. And we come to this passage, and it's actually a very pivotal passage in the Sermon on the Mount. I loved it. Janet actually said this morning as we were praying in a leadership team, this is where the rubber meets the road. And I would say that's very true. This is a very pivotal passage in the Sermon on the Mount. And in many ways, I would say God is calling us to assess. He's calling us to ask ourselves some questions. Are we actually living for the kingdom or are we living for this earth? And it's a really core question. And really, he's saying, do you want my kingdom? I'm telling you what my kingdom is in the Sermon on the Mount. Is that what you really want? Do you want my kingdom? So there's three questions we're going to be asking today. What is your deepest longing? What is your focus? And where is your allegiance? And you'll find that this passage speaks to all of those. And even though you have three images, which we'll get into, the treasure and the eye and the master, they all tie together. When I first was reading, I was like, wait, we just jumped from the treasure to the eye and the lamp. And now we're back to the master with the money. And so I was confused, but I think you'll find that they all tie together actually beautifully. It's funny how Jesus does that, right? Before we get into that, I want to share with you a little story of mine. I have my daughter's 12 and a half, but when she was one, she had this white dog that was truly her treasure. It was one of those little dogs that when you pulled it, it would go beep, 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 and kind of make a noise. But you can see she's in a different outfit in every single one of those. This dog was so much her treasure that we actually got a portrait taken with her and her little dog up there on the second to the left. But she loved this little plastic dog. It wasn't even like soft or anything. And she would kiss it and she would hold it and she would treasure it. And it truly was just very special to her. She called it Colors, by the way. And the funny thing is, when I showed her these pictures just the other day, she goes, "I called it Colors. It has no color. I don't get it." So, this is what's interesting is this dog means nothing to her now. Not one bit. It still means something to me because I saw how much it mattered to her. But she doesn't have it now. She doesn't look for it. She doesn't long for it in the ways that she used to. It literally holds nothing for her now. And this is very natural for a child. This is normal in childhood for them to have certain things that they connect to or longed for or treasure. But what's interesting is, as adults, we're still doing this. We still have these things that are these treasures that we're longing for and we're desiring and we're focused on, and they have our allegiance, and yet maybe 5 years from now they'll mean nothing to us. And so we're clinging to things that truly don't matter, that are fleeting. Whether it be, you know, cars or your new kitchen, if you were to think about something that 5 years ago had a lot of value for you, chances are, if it's not something that's a heavenly treasure, it may not hold any much value at all now. So we see that these treasures are fleeting and don't hold much. And so in this passage, we're going to unpack these three images that we see here. We have, again, this image of the treasure, the image of the eye, and the image of the master. And so we're going to unpack all three of those. And they are all tied together, if I could get my notes to flip here. So we'll start with the first one. Here's the actual passage. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and vermin. I agree. It doesn't seem like it should be moths. That seems odd. I agree with you, Sarah. Okay, where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasure in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So basically, in this passage, Jesus is saying, what do you prize most? What is most important to you? What is your deepest longing? What is your treasure? And to think about it, a treasure has a pull on us. If you think about people who are going after a treasure, they're pulled to the treasure. It's pulling us in. It's driving us. It draws us in. And our hearts then follow it. So whatever that treasure is, it's drawing us, and then our hearts are following. And this passage is saying there are two places you can have your treasure. The first is you can have your treasure on earth. And what he says is, any treasure on earth, there will be deterioration, and there will be unforeseen circumstances, deterioration in the moth and the rust and the vermin, and unforeseen circumstances where a thief can break in and actually take it. It's anything bound to this earth is liable to fail. Anything bound to this earth is liable to fail. And so he's saying those are earthly treasures, the things that deteriorate, the things that experience unforeseen circumstances, the things that fail you, the things that are fleeting. And then we have, he describes heavenly treasure. So we have to ask ourselves, what would be heavenly treasure? And it would be anything immune from the ravages of a broken world, immune from sin. And we'll get into that more. He ultimately wants to be that treasure and have that drive every other heavenly treasure. But you cannot do both. That is a key part of this passage. You cannot treasure the things of heaven and treasure the things of earth. It's saying you have to choose. Do you want my kingdom or do you want this kingdom here on earth? What do you want? And so what are some of these earthly treasures? We immediately think of possessions, and I think rightfully so, material things. In our study guide, I actually leaned toward that when I was first writing it. We're going to kind of go a number of directions this morning, but money and materialism are definitely a key part of earthly treasures, but it can also be a drive for power that consumes. It can be a drive for praise or the approval of man. That consumes. Philippians 3:19 through 20 says, those who are looking at earthly treasure, their destiny is destruction. Their God is their stomach, so it can be food. And their glory, looking for glory outside of him, is their shame. Their mind is on earthly things, but ours, those who have the kingdom of God and are living for that, it is in heaven. Our citizenship is in heaven. So then, what are these heavenly treasures? And one of the things I want to point out, it says where your treasure is. That doesn't mean where it will be at some point when you are in eternity. It's saying where your treasure is now is a heavenly, can be a heavenly treasure. And so it's important to recognize this is a now treasure, and it's anything of eternal value. Anything that has eternal value. So possessions, if you're actually using your wealth and your goods for mercy and kindness, that is a heavenly treasure. When you're using it for the things of the kingdom, your possessions, when you aren't looking for power, but you're submitting to God's power, that's of heavenly treasure. Praise, when you're seeking God's approval and wanting him to be the one who is praised, that is heavenly treasure. And I want to point out, relationships are a heavenly treasure. Relationships last in eternity. It's really important that we recognize that. So when we pour into one another, that is a heavenly treasure, because that will last. It is beyond just this earthly time. So what Jesus says here is actually very simple. It's all the stuff of this world is part of a passing world. It's fleeting. It offers no lasting hope or joy or peace. And it offers no security. And one of the commentaries I was reading was talking a lot about how we actually seek these earthly treasures because we're desperate for security. And yet he is our only security. I'm going to share with you this quote from Sinclair Ferguson. Actually, yeah, it is Sinclair. Okay. The more we gather possessions in order to feel secure, the more we feel we need them in order to actually be secure, then the more we need to guard them to try to maintain security. It just shows this vicious cycle that the need of possessions breeds the need for more possessions to try to maintain security. So it's almost this thing that we get caught on a cycle. And Jesus is interested in the heart. That's the key thing. He's saying, lay up your confidence in God. He wants us to prize God and his kingdom above everything else. He says, I want to be your treasure. I want my kingdom to be what you treasure. He is calling us to a spiritual detachment from this world. He actually wants us detached from the things of this world and trying to find security in them. It's interesting. I read a story about a man who had suddenly won a million, or not won, maybe it was earned, but $1 million. And of that, he went to church and he decided that he was going to tithe 10%, and he gave $100,000 to his church. And then soon thereafter, for whatever reason, whether the market crash or whatever had led to this, he lost everything. He lost all the $900,000. He went bankrupt. And somebody said to him, friend, are you so sad that you gave that money, that $100,000 to your church? And he said, no, it's actually the only part of what I kept from that. So I want you to think about that. He said, no, that is the only thing that had any lasting value. The other $900,000 had no value. It was the money where he was laying up treasures in heaven. And I want to note something, and I think this is important for us to think about. As as a Christian community, we can tend to talk about God's blessing being when people receive material things, when they have financial wealth, that we say that you have been so blessed by God. And I think Jesus would actually say something different. He would say the mark of blessing is actually what we've been talking about in this Sermon on the Mount. It's a poverty of spirit. It's a mourning for sin. It's a persecution for the sake of righteousness. That's what's blessed. But we have so bought into the world's thing that we see somebody who has been given a lot and we go, oh, you're so blessed by God. And yes, that's true on one level, but I think a true blessing of God is the mark that God has actually delivered a person from having treasuring the things of earth. When we have been delivered from treasuring the things of earth, that is a person who's truly blessed. The parable of the sower says, oh, there's Oswald Chambers, and I didn't put up the parable of the sower, so I will read it to you. We know of the different seed that... well, maybe some of you don't know, but I will say there's a parable that talks about the seed and it's being planted and different things happen to the seed. And I want to note that in one of those, the thorns that choke out the good seed. So when that seed is planted and the thorns that choke it out, do you know what it is? It's the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth and the desires for other things. And I have to say, we have to ask ourselves, are we caught up in a life where that seed is actually getting choked out by these very things? This is what happens when we're treasuring the things of earth. Our love for God does get choked out. So he's calling us to live for heaven and not for earth. We're part of God's kingdom here on earth. And I want to share this quote from, this is from Oswald Chambers. The man or woman who is truly heavenly minded is the one who brings the atmosphere of heaven down to earth and lives a life of practical holiness. When one's treasures are in heaven, such a person is delivered from grasping and maintaining status in this world. She alone is free to love and serve others. That is a seed that hasn't been choked out. It's free to love and serve. And so the question in this image of the treasure is, what are you actually longing for? What's at the heart of your longings? What are you treasuring? And then we move into the second image, which is the eyes. And Matthew, here we are. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? So in this passage, Jesus is describing our spiritual eyes. And he's saying our eyes are, in essence, our focus. Okay? And it's the symbol of the conscience. What are we thinking about, dreaming on, dwelling on? And the effect of healthy eyes allows you to see clearly. And what's interesting is that word healthy there for the healthy eyes is actually, I don't know how to pronounce this, but the Greek word is aplos. And what I want to tell you is it actually means to be single, uncompounded, pure, or undivided. So to have a single focus, to have it be pure and to have it be undivided is what means to have healthy eyes. That means that we know what our focus is on. Ironically, the juxtaposition of that, the panaris, which is unhealthy, is that your loyalty is divided. When your loyalty is divided, then darkness seeps in. And it leads to ruin and decay and defeat, and it's unstable. So a singularly focused on Jesus and the kingdom, he says, you are full of light. If you are divided and double-minded, as James says, then there is darkness in you. As soon as we lose sight of God, the darkness of the world creeps in. It's just the truth. When we're not fixed on him, the darkness creeps in. Bad eyes equal a shifted focus. We direct our attentions away from God. And so poor spiritual vision would be having wrong priorities, influences that direct our lives away from the kingdom. It's a spiritual blindness. John Piper says, Jesus says the mark of a Christian is that her eyes, he actually said his, but I changed it. We're women here, right? Jesus says the mark of a Christian is that her eyes are on heaven, that her focus and she measures all her behavior by what effect it will have on heaven, everlasting joy with God. How many of you are glasses wearers or contact wearers? Okay, a lot of people. Okay, clearly I am. I'm very nearsighted, so I don't need glasses to read. But if I don't have my glasses, if I take these off, I can't see your faces. I have no idea what's going on. It's interesting how when my focus is off, I feel like the whole world goes dim. Like I can't engage the world in the same way. I forgot to put my glasses on a couple years ago when I was walking Jesse to school, and I'm literally have all of these people passing me, and I'm like, I don't know who it is. And I just felt like I couldn't engage the world around me in the same way because I didn't even know who was passing me. And I just want you to think about that. When our focus isn't clear, it changes how we engage the world around us. And what this passage is saying is, I want you to have your focus on me. Your eyes are healthy when your attention is undivided and it's toward me. I want you to see me. And then finally, we have this image of the masters. No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Those are very strong, powerful words. The obvious implication here actually is that we are made to have a master. It doesn't actually say if you have a master. It says you will have a master, and you can't serve two of them. It is assumed you will have an allegiance to someone or something. Worship is an integral part of actually how we're made. He made us to be worshipers. We have this allegiance in us that was developed. It's part of our natural nature to have an allegiance to something. And we were made to do this worship. And when we don't worship the Lord, which is what we were made to do, we actually don't cease worshiping. Does that make sense? Well, we were made to worship him. When we're not worshiping him, we don't cease worshiping. We start worshiping the wrong things. We start worshiping the things that impact our souls. Romans 1:25 says, we have exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshiped and served the created things rather than the creator. We will worship. The question is, who are we worshiping, or has it been changed to what are we worshiping? So we've been talking about this longing and this focus, and where is our devotion, and what is our allegiance? When we have a master, we have an allegiance to the master, and God is calling us for the single-minded allegiance to the King of Kings. And it does say God versus money in this passage. So that's an interesting juxtaposition. Our faith and finances are closely linked. We cannot deny that because so much of what we do with our finances is where our treasure is following. Okay? And so that's why he's saying this money is representative of our values and how we spend it. And Jesus arguably talks about money more than anything else. And he says this because it reveals our hearts. How we're using our money and how we're spending it reveals our hearts. The word, when we're talking about the master, let me go back to the passage. When we're talking about the master and this word of serve, it actually is, again, the Greek word, which I don't know Greek, so don't think that I'm like that wise. Okay, I just study. doulos, it means you are not your own. You're a slave to something. You are not your own. So the question is, what are you actually a slave to? And interestingly, I think he juxtaposes money and God because money makes kind of the same demands as God. It demands an allegiance. And he's calling us to make a choice. And he's saying you cannot. It's very clear in this passage. You cannot do both. You will either have an allegiance to me, or I will say you will have an allegiance to money or the things of this world, that you cannot do both. Hate one and love the other. James 4:4 says, whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world actually makes himself an enemy of God. Whew. These are strong words we're hearing this morning, right, you guys? So the question is, where is your allegiance? And what's interesting is, when God is your master, then you'll make money serve his kingdom. When God is your master, your money and your wealth, you will want to make that serve his kingdom. So the question is, and we have to be honest with ourselves this morning, how are we pandering to a worldly heart? How have we missed the mark? And if we're honest, we all have. I sure have. How are we trying to love God and the world at the same time? What are you actually longing for? What are you focused on? What is your allegiance? I had you write down the things that were on your mind. One, because I think that's just a healthy thing. But two, I think it actually reveals what's on your heart. And for some, you may look at that and go, ooh, there are some things on here that probably are not heavenly treasures. They might be earthly treasures. And that might be just right there, an opportunity to reflect. But I think we actually need to be honest with ourselves. We sit here every week, and we come to study, and we're studying the Sermon on the Mount, but the question is, what do we really want? Who do we really want? And, you know, it's not, we can sit here and ask ourselves and think, well, I know what I want people to think that I want. I know what I want, that what I want to be visible to the world as to what I want, but what's actually in me? And I think it's an important question. And I also think you should ask. We should ask ourselves, what would God say is our treasure? If you were having a conversation with him, what would he say, Christina? This is what I see that you actually treasure. Does he say it's him, or does he say it's something else? This passage, I think of a lot. These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. And I'm going to be honest. We gather every week, and we honor him with our lips, but I want us to truly ask ourselves the question, are our hearts near? Are we truly longing for him more than anything else? Or would he say, your hearts are far from me? You're honoring me all the time with your lips, but your heart isn't near. In this passage, Jesus is asking us to choose him. Choose him and his kingdom over everything else. And what's interesting is, I read this quote from Randy Alcorn that honestly, I was like, oh my gosh, that resonates with me so much. So I'm going to read it to you. He says, he who lays up treasures on earth spends his life backing away from his treasures. As we're moving forward toward eternity, you're backing away from your treasures. To him, death is loss. He who lays up treasures in heaven looks forward to eternity. He's moving daily toward what he actually treasures. To him, death is gain. I'm convinced that the greatest deterrent to choosing God over money is the illusion that earth is our home. We don't long for eternity enough. And I'll tell you, this so resonated with me because I went through a transformation in this way. I was raised in the church. I would praise God with my lips in every way. And I would say that when I would think about heaven, it held nothing for me. So I would say that he was my treasure, but when I actually thought about heaven, I didn't long for it in any way. I wanted to stay right where I was and enjoy all the things of this life, and that's what I wanted more than anything, if I'm honest with myself. And when Judson got sick and passed away, it changed everything for me in this regard. And for those of you who don't know, I'm sorry, because I know that I hate being on the outs, but I lost my son. It was 11 years ago. He was 3. And something happened when I lost him, is that suddenly one of my sweetest treasures was in heaven. And it made me long for heaven more than I can even tell you. And it began to actually detach me from this world. Because I felt like I had this leg here, but I had half my heart in heaven. But something else happened, is that I began to feel Jesus saying to me, Christina, why do you long for your son more than you actually long for me? And he began to say to me, Christina, I want you to long for your presence with me even more than you long for your presence to be present with your son. And that became a transformative thing, which began to separate me from this world. And I'm still tied to it, everybody. So I'm not saying I've been released from that. But I began to experience my heart longing for something so much more, where death and sin and brokenness are no more. I wanted to be there, and I still do. I will tell you that every day my heart is, half my heart is in heaven. And it is not now just because Jed, it's because God has said, I want you to treasure me. And I want you to treasure me more than anything. And he did that work, and he's still doing that work, because again, I need to be released from so much. But it was interesting when something that I had treasured here on earth was suddenly in heaven, it shifted things for me. But then it actually gave me greater perspective for God saying, this is what I want for you. I want you to want me more than anything. And so it's a constant release. I'm going to conclude with this passage. I've been giving us a lot of scripture, but there's so much scripture that ties into this. There's my treasure. I did add that at the end. I long for him, but I want to long for Jesus even more. And every day I long for the presence of both of them. 1 Timothy 6:17 through 19 says, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. This is all what it means to have heavenly treasures. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for not this age, but the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. And I highlighted that, though you can't really tell. I tried to. The life that is truly life. The question is, do we believe that? Is that the life that is truly life? Let me pray.